only thing we have to fear is...
In war, fear itself. There is no substitute for victory.
Let us never negotiate out of fear.
We stand undivided, forever united, fighting hand in hand for the liberty we burn, for glory and honor, for our sons and daughters, ever mindful of the lessons we've learned. Let the torch of freedom burn.
Welcome to the intersection of faith and politics. This is Wall Builders Live with David Barton and Rick Green. Thank you for joining us today. Got a very special program for you today. We're actually going to head out to the Pro-Family Legislators Conference, so we're not actually going to be live today. We're going to a conference that took place a few weeks ago, but it's a great presentation by David Barton on American exceptionalism. What does that mean? How do we preserve it if we want it? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Does it mean America's bragging, or does it mean there is something exceptional, extraordinary, extraordinary, beyond ordinary, beyond normal? Is there something special about America? And David Barton's going to talk about that, how the Founding Fathers did that, and what we can do to preserve and protect that. It's a great presentation. If you've never heard of the Pro-Family Legislators Conference, you want to check it out on our website at wallbuilders.com. We bring in state reps and state senators from across the nation for a fantastic weekend of interaction, networking, really rejuvenation. I mean, if you've been on, I can tell you as a former legislator, it wears you out, and you need that opportunity to interact with other faith-based folks that understand a biblical point of view. And that's what we do for this weekend. They get the chance to come together and sharpen each other's countenance. And then we bring in some of the greatest speakers around the nation to speak on subjects that are affecting these legislators and us as citizens right now today in the culture, and how to approach those issues from a biblical point of view and a historical point of view. And this particular presentation we're going to be sharing today and tomorrow from David Barton is that historical point of view of what makes America so exceptional. So if for some reason you might miss tomorrow, don't worry. It'll be available on our website at wallbuilderslive.com. But right now we're going to get the beginning of the presentation from David Barton at the Pro-Family Legislators Conference on American Exceptionalism.
There was a federal law that was passed that said you're not allowed to hire any foreign labor to come in and do any job in the United States. That's the way the law was written. That's the way it was worded. And so with that law that says no foreign labor allowed to come do things in the United States, a church in New York City, Church of the Holy Trinity, brought in a minister from England, hired a minister from England. Well, the U.S. attorney in New York City immediately took the church to court and said, you can't do that. Federal law says you can't hire anyone, foreign labor, to come do any job in the United States. Can't do it. And so the Church of the Holy Trinity said, you can't tell us who will and won't be our pastor. You got no control over who's going to be our pastor. And so it worked its way all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. When it got to the Supreme Court made a brilliant question. They said, when you look at a law, what you want to determine, and this is their quote, determine the evil to be remedied by that law. In other words, what did they try to stop when they gave this law? What were they after? And they said, well, you go back to legislative records, it's real clear. This whole law was passed to stop the influx of Chinese slave labor that was working on the Westward Railroad. It wasn't intended to stop every foreign person from working in the United States. The whole debate was about these guys building the railroad are bringing in slave labor from China, and they're using that to build the railroads, and we've fought slavery, and we don't want slavery. We don't want whether it's black or Chinese or anything else. And the court says, when you look at that, it's really clear. The Congress never had in its mind ever to interfere with church hiring of pastors. And then the court went further and says, when you want to determine the intent of, when you want to apply the law, you always determine the intent of the law. And so they gave an example. They gave two more laws. One was a federal law that says you will never interfere with a mail carrier. It's that axiom, the mail must go through. And rain, snow, sleet, whatever. And so the federal law says you cannot interfere with the mail carrier and the performance of his duty. And in this particular case, there was a federal prosecutor who arrested a man for interfering with a mail carrier in the performance of his duty. This case went all the way to court, got to the top court, and top court struck it down and said, no, it's fine to interfere with this mail carrier in the performance of duty, because it turns out the guy who was interfering was a sheriff and was executing a murder warrant on a mail carrier who had killed somebody. So went to arrest the mail carrier. Well, the mail carrier is indicted for murder. Well, he obviously interfered with the mail, but did Congress pass a law intending that you wouldn't arrest a murderer if he happens to be a mail carrier? Obviously not. So they said, don't worry about the wording of the law. Worry about what the intent of the law is. Ignore the wording. Go to what the intent. And so they gave several examples like that. One other example they gave was a law that was passed that says you're not a, and this was back in the days when fencing was a big deal in the West and elsewhere. And you put up fences and people didn't want fences. They wanted open range and they'd had cattle grazing. And so the fence deal was a big deal. And so they passed a law that says, if a fence is put up, you're not allowed to tear down your neighbor's fence. If your neighbor put the fence up, you can't tear it down. If he wants to fence off his property, that's fine. You put a fence up, you can't tear it down. And a guy three times put a fence up and three times his neighbor tore it down. Well, finally ended up in court because he's breaking the law. He's tearing down his neighbor's. Well, it turns out that his neighbor kept erecting the fence not on his property, but on the other guy's property. And the other guy says, well, you can have a fence on your property, but don't you build your fence on my property. Well, he tore down the fence three times because it's built on the wrong property. He was taken into court, and they said, you violated the law. Law says you can't tear down another man's fence. Well, I can't if he built it on my property, not his. So, again, there's that case is so good. It's worth reading because it keeps focusing back on something the Founding Fathers pointed to in 2 Corinthians 3:16, that the spirit of the law gives life, but the letter of law kills.
This is David Barton with another moment from America's history. Federal courts have made several amazing rulings recently, ordering the removal of a cross from a cemetery, banning religious holiday displays, removing the Ten Commandments from public view, prohibiting student prayers whether verbal or silent, and numerous other similar restrictive rulings. As one current justice has noted, the Supreme Court has now become, quote, a national board of theology. Our founding fathers would be astounded. They designed the First Amendment to keep the federal courts completely out of this issue. As Thomas Jefferson forcefully declared, I consider the federal government as prohibited by the Constitution from meddling with religious exercises. The First Amendment was designed to keep decisions on religious expression out of the federal courts and in the hands of the local communities.
For more information on God's hand in American history, contact Wall Builders at 1-800-8-REBUILD.
If you do it by the letter of the law, you'll misapply it time after time. Now, having said that, last night when we were at dinner, I said one of the things that we're going to make our objective for this year for people who listen on our radio stuff, all these folks across the nation, is by the end of the year, they're going to be able to name the five taxes for liberalism. They're going to be able to name the seven articles of the Constitution, and they're going to be able to name the six principles of American exceptionalism. And that's what I'm going to hit here for a bit. What are the six principles? Because everything we do in government goes to one of these six principles. We take an oath to uphold the Constitution. Everything, every clause in the Constitution goes to one of these six principles. So I want to take you through it. And this is another interesting thing that I find is the resistance we have toward teaching American exceptionalism today. I've been appointed a number of states to do history standards. So in Texas, we try to do it. Got a lot of pushback from teachers. We can't teach that. In Oklahoma, the superintendent of public instruction asked me to help up there. Got pushback from teachers. Said, oh, American exceptionalism is terrible. And if you ask people to define what it is, most of them don't know what it is. They can't define it. Or it's, well, it's that cocky American arrogance. No, that is not the definition of American exceptionalism. Let me give you the definition of American exceptionalism. Very simply, American exceptionalism is, point one, it describes the unprecedented stability, freedom, and prosperity. Now, that's why we say America's exceptional, because we have prosperity, we have freedom, we have stability, unlike any other nation. 236 years under the same piece of paper, nobody else comes close. 4% of the population, America, world's population produces 31% of the world's GDP. That's prosperity like no one else has. So this is what we see for American exceptionalism. But it describes the unprecedented stability, freedom, and prosperity that's the result of institutions and policies. We're prosperous because we have a free market system. We're free because we have a constitutional system that guarantees liberty. So it describes the unprecedented stability, freedom, and prosperity that's the result of institutions and policies produced by unique governing philosophy. So here's where it all starts. You get a philosophy that produced institutions and produced policies that gives you this kind of fruit. Well, we live under this kind of fruit, not because that's the fruit, but because we start right here with the right philosophy. If you don't get the philosophy right, you'll never have the fruit that produces American exceptionalism. So having said that, and this is the definition of American exceptionalism, it's this part that we want to look at, the unique governing philosophy. So what is the philosophy that produced American exceptionalism? You have to go back to the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence sets it forth in 155 words. That's our national birth certificate. When they created government, they said, look, here's what we're fighting for. Here's the principles that we're telling the whole world that we're fighting for. And so that declaration, and by the way, if your state has not passed the Celebrate Freedom Week, that's a great deal. We've got that implemented in Texas. I think Oklahoma has it, some other states. And it's every grade from grade 3 through 12 has to spend an entire week studying the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the historical background. Every year for those 9 grades of school, you have to go through these documents till you understand them and grasp them and get a hold of them. So when you start with the Declaration, these 155 words, they set forth 6 principles that produce American exceptionalism. These are the principles that come in these 155 words that every American has to know. If they can know this, they can judge every clause of the Constitution and every policy by, from dog catcher through President of the United States against these 6 principles. You start at the beginning. It says, all men are created equal. They're endowed by their creator. Now, that phrase right there, and I'm just going to show you the 8 phrases, the 6 phrases out of the Constitution, 155 words. All men are created equal. They're endowed by the Creator. Principle number 1, we believe there's a divine Creator. That is not a private declaration. This is a government document announcing to the world what we in the American Congress believe. This is a position of public policy given by a political body to the rest of the world. So the belief that there is a divine Creator is, oh, you have the right to express that privately. No, this is a fundamental principle of American government. This is where we start. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, they're endowed by the... That's the first of all the self-evident truths that are out there. These are the principles we set forth that are non-negotiable in American government. We believe publicly that there's a creator. Now, this is something that's significant when you look at folks like George Washington, father of country. George Washington talks about this when he issued actually the Thanksgiving Proclamation October. You see here October of 1789. Those that are interested, we have that proclamation. You can see his actual original Thanksgiving Proclamation if you come out on Sunday morning. But I want you to notice why he issued, why would George Washington, through the federal government, issue a proclamation calling the people to pray to God? Why is that a federal responsibility? Why not let just people do that if they want to? Why not let them go to church on Sunday? If you want to acknowledge God, why make it a federal issue? Why did George Washington do that? He tells us right up to, he says, the reason to do this, he says, whereas, he said, because, you see that clause there, he said, whereas, or because it's the duty of all nations, and notice that, the word duty, that's not a light word, particularly in their day and time. If you can think militarily, military uses the word duty really well. Other people don't use the word duty very well. Matter of fact, one of the things I really have started pressing in dealing with writing history standards, I absolutely object to states telling kids that they have a right to vote. You don't have a right to vote. You've got a duty to vote.
This is David Barton with another moment from America's history. As Christians become more active in politics, they must remember to elevate principles above party loyalty. Perhaps the best illustration of this comes from the life of Founding Father Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence who served in the presidential administrations of John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison, each of whom was from a different political party. When Benjamin Rush was asked of his personal party affiliation, he responded, "I've been alternately called an aristocrat and a Democrat. I am neither. I am a Christocrat. I believe all power will fail of producing order and happiness in the hands of man. He alone who created and redeemed man is qualified to govern him." Like Benjamin Rush, we too must remain Christocrats regardless of our personal party affiliation.
For more information on God's hand in American history, contact Wall Builders at 1-800-8-REBUILD.
It's not a right. It's something you have to do. If you're going to be part of this participatory republic, this is a citizen responsibility. It's not optional. If you want this thing to work right, you got to be involved. We showed up on last Tuesday week that we're not very involved. I mean, way too many people sat home. People who voted even 4 years before that just sat home. So that's a duty. He said it's the duty. Get that word duty. It is the duty of all nations to do four things. Now look what George Washington said is the duty of nations, political entities to do. He said it's their duty to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. Washington said, I'm issuing this proclamation because we as who? As nations. We as nations have a duty to do four things. This is not private faith. This is a public belief and acknowledgement of God. So that is the first principle is, number one, you start with the belief that there is a divine creator. Not a matter of personal belief. That's a matter of public policy. Therefore, anything in the Constitution that would go against that, the way they interpret it today, it violates everything that causes American exceptionalism. Anything that's advocated by any party, by any policy, by any individual that limits that is going to undermine American exceptionalism. The second point we get out of the Declaration says very simply, they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. That's the second point. We believe that inalienable rights come from God. They're rights that God gives that government does not give. Now, when you look at unalienable rights, you say, well, what in the world is unalienable right? How do you define that? The guys who wrote the documents tell us what an unalienable right is. Let me go, for example, to John Adams. John Adams says this. He says, unalienable rights are antecedent. In other words, they come before, preceding. Unalienable rights precede all earthly governments. So go back to the first government in the Bible. These rights that we're talking about existed before there was ever a government in the Bible. You start with Noah back in Genesis 9. These are rights that God gave individuals before there was ever civil government. So they're not government-given rights. They're God-given rights to every individual. They're rights antecedent to all earthly government, and they cannot be repealed or restrained by human laws. They're rights derived from the great legislator of the universe. Now, you identify what these God-given rights are, and once you know what they are, government's got to leave them alone. So we start with the second premise. There is a God. God gives certain rights to every individual the government's not allowed to touch. This is the way Alexander Hamilton defined an unalienable right. He says, inalienable rights are not to be rummaged for among old parchments or musty records. In other words, it is not government documents that give us these rights. He says, they are written as with a sunbeam in the whole volume of human nature by the aid of the divinity itself and can never be erased or obscured by mortal power. These are rights that don't come from government. They precede government. So our first premise is there's a creator. The second premise is there's a set of rights that doesn't come from government, that does come from God, and those are God-given rights. Now, you say, all right, well, what's included in those God-given rights? Again, the people who wrote that told us a lot about it. In the Declaration, Sam Adams, father of the Revolution, said, you know, we mentioned the Declaration that among others we have the rights, he said, first, of life, secondly, to liberty, thirdly, to property. Of course, today we say, I thought it was life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Their definition of the pursuit of happiness is the ability to pursue, to own, to acquire, to enjoy, and to use your own private property. Back then, the king thought he owned everything. God was not into collective ownership. He was into individual ownership, which is why two of the Ten Commandments deal with protecting private property. So they say, hey, that's a God-given right. And that's why even today we say that the American dream, what is that? It's to own your own home. No, it's to own your own property. Having your own private property, that's the pursuit of happiness. That's why it's life, liberty, and property. So these are three. Now, 11 years later, after they had won the revolution, Great Britain signed the peace treaty. We're now creating a national form of government. They said, you know, remember we told you 11 years ago that among others there was life, liberty, and property? Well, now we'll go ahead and tell you what a bunch of the others are. And so in the Bill of Rights, they went through and listed other inalienable rights. None of these are God-given rights. None of these are government-given rights. They're all God-given rights. First Amendment right to worship God according to the dictates of conscience. That predates any government. Government's not allowed to regulate that, restrict that, impinge on that, and do anything with it because that's a God-given right. Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. They call that the biblical right of self-defense. The Third Amendment right to the sanctity of the home. Government's not supposed to be regulating the home, what goes on in the home, including marriage. The Fourth Amendment all the way through the Eighth Amendment, all the due process clauses, where it's the confrontation clause. There's a number of clauses in the Fourth through Eighth Amendments we talked about last night, how the Bible shaped those clauses. You go through all those amendments, they're all inalienable rights. So this was listed to tell government what it's not allowed to do. The whole purpose of the Bill of Rights is not to regulate the states or anything else. It's to regulate government and say government in general, you can't touch these rights because these come from God to the people. They're outside of your purview. Now, that's been the federalization document. This is what the courts have used to federalize the states. They now tell the states what they can and can't do under these amendments. And so now you've got the government saying what each of these apply to, which is exactly the opposite of what was designed. So that's called the selective incorporation of the Bill of Rights. It's something that began back in the 1920s with activist courts. But this is the method by which they have really federalized the states. It's the selective incorporation Bill of Rights, turning that into a way to regulate states. Nonetheless, that is the second point, is inalienable rights come from God. The third point, going back to the clause in the Declaration, it says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Why are governments instituted among men? To secure these rights.
Hi, this is Tim Barton with Wall Builders, and I want to encourage all the pastors out there with the unique opportunity that we're presenting at Wall Builders. We're doing a special tour just for pastors that you can come and learn more about the spiritual heritage of our nation. Not just seeing the sites, but understanding the significance of what they are and what they represent. We get to go through the Capitol at night, and we get to see the spiritual heritage of our founding fathers, of who we are as a nation, where we came from. We bring in congressmen that'll tell you about current legislation, about our religious liberties and freedom, and what's going on in Washington, D.C. If you're a pastor, or if you want to recommend your pastor for this trip, you can go to our website, www.wallbuilders.com, and there's a link that's for scheduling. If you click on that link, there's a section for pastor's briefing. There's more information about the dates, when it's going, how it's going to happen. If you want to know more about our nation, our religious liberties, our freedom, our spiritual heritage, this is a trip you want to be a part of.
Let the torch of freedom burn.
The number one purpose of government is to protect inalienable rights. So government exists to protect inalienable rights. It doesn't exist to produce prosperity. It doesn't exist to keep you, none of that stuff we hear about government today. It exists to protect inalienable rights. That's the reason, because people are always wanting to impinge on your inalienable rights, and that's why government steps in and says, well, you can't do that. There's a right to life, therefore you can't murder somebody else. There's a right to property. We're not going to let you steal somebody else's property. Burglary, theft, whether it be through embezzlement or so that's why government exists, is to protect inalienable rights. And that's why we have certain types of laws. We'll talk about that as one of the other principles. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And you have James Wilson saying it this way. He says, the principle of government, the principal object of government, is to acquire a new security for the enjoyment of rights which we were previously entitled by the immediate gift of our all-wise and all-beneficent Creator. Principal purpose of government is so that we can enjoy what God told every person he has a right to enjoy. So that's why government exists. That's what they understood. That's why they created government, was to protect those rights. You have Sam Adams saying something very similar. He says, government was originally designed for the preservation of the inalienable rights. That's why government exists. God created government at the beginning to make sure that those rights were enforced, that you can't take someone else's life. You can't take someone else's property. You can't take someone else's wife or family or anything. It's protecting inalienable rights. Now, within that, it's interesting that you have this list here, and within that are things like a right to life. Now, right to life, that is not a rhetorical piece of literature and prose from American founding. It literally was. It dealt with the abortion issue. No question that it dealt with the abortion issue. That's easy to see through books like this one that dealt with abortion back in 1808. I don't know why folks today think abortion's a new issue. Maybe it's because Roe v. Wade changed what we do with abortion, but it's not a new issue. But you have founding fathers that talk about this issue very openly, one of which is James Wilson, who signed both the Declaration and the Constitution, started the first law school in America. He's considered a master builder of the Constitution, second most active member of the Constitutional Convention. We have his original law books, and in there he talks about abortion. He says, students, he said, with consistency, beautiful and undeviating, human life, from its commencement to its close, is protected by the common law. And please remember that phrase, common law. We'll talk about that in a minute. He says, protected by the common law. He says, in the contemplations of law, life begins when the infant is first able to stir in the womb, and by the law, that life is protected. As soon as you know there's life inside, protect it. That's an inalienable right. See, this is why John Witherspoon signed the Declaration and said, this is what makes us different from France. He said, in France, they think that parents create children, and therefore they allow parents to abort children because parents made them, parents can take them. He said, in America, we know that God gives life. That's an inalienable right that comes from God. Therefore, parents don't give life. Therefore, they're not allowed to take life.
Well, we're out of time for today, folks. That was David Barton talking about American exceptionalism at the Pro-Family Legislators Conference just a few weeks back. This is a great opportunity for your state rep and state senator. If you would like to learn more about the conference so that you can share it with your state rep and your state senator, you can find out more at wallbuilders.com. Click on the events section, and it has the Pro Family Legislative Network and the Pro Family Legislators Conference listed there. It really is a great opportunity. I encourage you to share it with them. You can also send it out to your friends and family so that they can share it with their state rep and their state senator. Thank you for joining us today. Tomorrow we'll get the conclusion from David Barton on American exceptionalism, where he was speaking at the Pro Family Legislators Conference. You've been listening to Wall Builders Live with David Barton and Rick Green.
We stand on the